from the Gothic Quarter in Barcelona. This is Market Movers, the podcast that gives you a closer look at the financial markets to trade responsibly. Here are your hosts, Lior Cohen and Yochai Elam.
Hello and welcome. Thank you for joining us, sharing the podcast with a friend and spreading the good word. This is episode number 35, recorded on Thursday, January 29th. I'm your co-host, Lior Cohen, and joining me, he got snubbed again from the World Economic Forum in Davos, Yochai Elam. How's it going, Yochai?
Hi, Lior. Yeah, I'm doing great. It's much better here in sunny Barcelona.
Yeah, it's much better weather and much better things to do, so let's get through it, man. This week, yeah. We're going to break down Greek elections and their ramifications on the euro, and does it mean there is a Grexit? A preview for the US GDP, the latest from the FOMC meeting, and review the latest developments from the country down under. But first, the Greek elections, the almighty elections that, for a relatively small country, so many people took the time to look at. Does it have any ramifications for the euro, Yochai?
Well, yeah, it does have ramifications. If there is a chance that Greece will leave the eurozone, it'll be a first, but I think that the chances are low.
You think that the chances are still low, even though they had such a big turnaround in their recent elections?
Yeah, I think that there is a general exhaustion from austerity, weariness in all of Europe, and now the Syriza party, led by charismatic Alexis Tsipras, won the elections. There are ramifications for the general direction of Europe, and I think eventually a united eurozone is good for everybody, because for Germany, for example, it keeps the value of the euro lower than it could be for Germany, supporting the exports. And if one country leaves, it opens the door for others to leave, and that would be bad.
But do you think that, I know that they have like two sides for this debate, people who, I think the majority, don't put much thought into it and think, yeah, okay, the Greeks are maybe a little bit more pro into getting out of the eurozone, okay, who cares? And those on the other side think, oh my god, this is could have some implications of what does it mean for other countries, Italy, Portugal, Spain, what does it mean for them? Are they next in line? So where exactly are you on these two fronts?
Well, I think it's a good development that eventually will lead to more fiscal stimulus that we talked about last week. The next country in question is Spain. In Spain, there's a new party called Podemos, which means we can. They had a huge success in the European parliamentary elections back in May 2014, and there are general elections in Spain in November. They're currently showing a lot of strength in the polls. The party already managed to change the current government's stance on corruption, forcing it basically to tackle corruption, so the Spanish parliament introduced new laws against this big issue that engulfs Spain. And I think I don't think Podemos will reach power. Maybe they can, but I think they won't.
Wait a second, they just took off Barack Obama's 2008 slogan and omitted the yes and just said we can. And now they had an entire platform over it?
Yeah.
That's plagiarism, man.
Obama said yes we can, they say Podemos, it's totally different language. You have to take that into
different
account.
Things.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Oh, sorry. My bad. Okay. So you guys also had the referendum in Spain about whether or not Catalonia will be separate. So that's another issue to take into account, no?
Yeah, there was a non-binding consultation back in November. It resulted in, well, depending on a great success if you ask Catalans and a great failure if you ask Spaniards. And anyway, the Catalan question is one of the big topics in Spain, together with constitutional reform, together with corruption, and also austerity amid still high unemployment rate of 23.7%. Now, what I think will happen is that this anti-austerity drive will eventually force two main mainstream parties in Spain to get a grip of their policies and to change their mind. Otherwise, they'll lose power to Podemos. So I think it'll lead to more openness to fiscal stimulus instead of fiscal austerity. And I don't think there's a breakup of the euro on the cards. I think Germany has all the interest to keep the eurozone intact. The eurozone just expanded with Lithuania as the 19th country.
I agree with you. I think that eventually this whole thing, when it comes to Greece, has next to nothing to do with what's going to happen to other countries. I think it's just pure speculation. And if eventually the Greeks will exit, the Greek exit, or let's, I don't know, the Souffle-Axe exit. I don't know, we have to come up with some other name. And if it's going to happen, I don't think it's have any ramifications on other countries or their trajectory with what to get, they're going to be. Because if it's going to be an exit, I think it's all going to fall on the Greeks themselves. Where do you stand on that?
Yeah, no, I think if Greece leaves alone, it won't do such a big damage to the Eurozone. But if it'll begin a domino effect or just delete the notion that the Euro is irreversible, that could have ramifications. But there is a big difference between what Alexis Tsipras, which has just been sworn in as prime minister, said in his election campaign and what he'll do. And the same goes for the other side, for Jean-Claude Juncker of the European Commission, of Angela Merkel, of François Hollande. They can be tough with Greece until they have to really negotiate with Tsipras. So eventually I think both sides will find some kind of compromise, a bit less austerity, but not some radical changes.
Also, the reaction from the Euro, I didn't see at the beginning of the week, I didn't see much of a reaction. I mean, how do you explain that?
The easiest explanation is just sell the Euro and buy the actual fact, because opinion polls all the way, they showed a victory for Tsipras, for Syriza. The gap even strengthened in the last week towards the elections. So I think markets did expect it. Actually, opinion polls were quite accurate, and eventually Syriza won 149 seats. Just short of an absolute majority, but they were quick to form a government with a party called Independent Greeks, which is aligned with Syriza on economic policy about anti-austerity, but actually more of a right-wing party. So there is a coalition that is around economic ideas and not about other ideology. So economy is left, front, and center, and I think with this kind of left-right unity, well, of course, the left is leading. Greece goes into negotiations with its head up, and but it doesn't mean yet again that what he said before the elections is what will happen. There is, well, as we know.
Yeah, as we know, he promised. He didn't promise to actually come follow through with his promises. So yeah, that's a famous quote from someone we both know. But yeah, I don't think any of our listeners would know to whom we're referring to.
Yeah.
So we'll leave it at that. A mystery guy. Okay, so do you have any idea where are we heading from now on? I mean, do we actually have to see that the Euro will resume its downward trajectory because of the Greece elections, or this news is, that's it, it's gone, we already know what's going to happen, it happened, and now we can move on to new and better and more exciting stuff?
Greece will currently, well, next few days move to the back burner. It'll still stay around, because if Greece has to negotiate another bailout or debt restructuring or less austerity or any changes, Greece will come to the forefront once again. But I think there are much bigger forces impacting the euro and euro dollar, and well, the ECB's massive QE decision that we talked about last week is a much bigger event for the euro and will have a long-lasting effect, much more than any events in Greece. I think Greece will, every time there will be some kind of crisis in negotiations, Greece will get back to the news. But in general, I don't think we'll see strong ramifications from the elections.
All right, that's fair enough. I think, yeah, I agree. I don't think that this news, once the election results came through and it was just as the polls predicted, then that was pretty much game over. And now we can move on to better and more exciting stuff, or not so exciting, but other stuff, such as the US GDP. This is going to be released on Friday. The current expectations are that it's going to be at 3.1%. So it's quite of a fall compared to the third quarter, where it has a 5%. So what led to this such a fall in the growth rate?
Well, I think it's the payback quarter. We had a terrible first quarter because of snow and bad weather in general in the first quarter, and now we're experiencing, I mean, our American listeners are experiencing the same, especially in the Northeast. And then we had a comeback quarter in the second one, and then very strong third quarter, which was built on strong inventory buildup and also defense spending.
Yeah, so government spending was a big issue. That was another big issue in the third quarter.
Exactly, and this was a one-off, I think, or two-off. Remind us, what were the topics then?
Back then, it was, I think it was the defense, and of course fighting Ebola and fighting ISIS. So that was the two main issues, no?
Right. So I think fighting ISIS continues, and but that's not a new expenditure, that's not growth. And fighting Ebola, I think, has waned off a bit. And I mentioned inventories, and they're, well, once you replenish the inventories, they're later depleted, and the other way around. So we have this kind of seesaw reaction. In any case, 5% annualized growth rate is just huge, and it's hard to sustain it. So if it really falls only to 3.1%, I think US policymakers can certainly smile. It's not too bad.
Yeah, it's not too bad. And also the IMF and the World Bank just recently revised up US growth rate for 2015. So the IMF predicts 3.6% and the World Bank 3.2%. So all in all, these two figures combined still show that the US economy will still grow at roughly what? The global economy.
Right, at the same rate as emerging markets.
Yeah, so that's a big boon for the US policymakers. I don't know how much Congress or the Senate can attribute that to their efforts, but at least the FOMC is pretty much could be happy with these kind of figures. Where do you see it with respect to the FOMC's policy?
Yeah, growth is of course important, and as you mentioned in one of our previous episodes, GDP numbers are, the first release of GDP numbers is always attached to a Fed meeting, and I'm sure Yellen and her colleagues have the information. In any case, GDP is not the mandate of the Fed. The Fed has two different mandates, employment and inflation. The former is doing really well. Employment is rising relatively fast with strong job growth. But the latter, inflation is weak, and not only because of oil prices, especially wage inflation is weak. So I think GDP has a strong impact on markets, but a little bit less on the Fed. What do you think?
Yeah, I think they're starting to be a little bit more concerned. It seems that way, at least from the market's perspective, that there is a little bit more concern about the fall in inflation, especially because of falling oil prices that also have some ramifications on the core inflation as well. And I think that if you look at the market expectations about the next rate hike, they have gone down. The probabilities have gone down, the implied probabilities from the yields, they have gone down substantially compared to what they were a month ago. It raises the question, so whether or not we will see a rate hike in mid-2015, or maybe it'll be pushed a little bit more forward than what currently expect. This is another issue to consider, and it could have substantial impact on the progress of US dollars and commodities and all over. And the yields, of course, the US Treasury yields, they continue to fall down on concerns over global economy. Turning back, I came to a little bit to a tangent, but turning back to the GDP, I think that it's most likely lead the way for the FOMC, but not enough to actually they'll do something about it, because as you said, concern about the labor market and the inflation. The labor market, as we said, is doing well when it comes to jobs, but not so much, I think, as you said, for wages. And this is an issue. We'll see if people will start getting raises in the beginning of the year. That's what you said, man. You said
they're going to get raises. Yeah, I promised it so many times, but you know, there's a difference between what podcast people say and what happens in reality. Yeah,
you promised, but you didn't promise to follow through, man.
Exactly,
you're such
a
good politician.
Exactly, yeah. Maybe I'll run for prime minister or president or something.
Yeah, you have my ballot, yeah, that's for sure. Okay, so let's do the game we all like. What's your expectations about the GDP, the growth rate?
I think that the first release will show a growth rate of only 2.5%, lower than the 3.1%. Recent US indicators just fell short of expectations, and I think we'll have another small disappointment here. But even if we have 2.5% in the fourth quarter, we'll have a total for 2014 of around 2.5%, and that's much stronger than many other economies, so I think it's all right.
And you think that the market reaction will be accordingly? I mean, if it's going to be below 3.1, then the US dollar will depreciate against leading currencies?
Yeah, clearly, if we have this is a very important figure. If we have under 3%, it'll be dollar negative. If we have 3.5% and up, it'll be dollar positive. And the first release always has the biggest impact because it's a big unknown, and it's a little bit like non-farm payrolls. It's a bit wild.
That's cool. Yeah, I'll go the opposite. I think it's going to be 3.3%. So let's see. We'll see who win this test that nobody cares about. All right. Okay, and turning from the US, let's go down the country down under. We have some big news ahead of us for the Aussies, including the RBA's next rate decision. So you think we're going to see some rate cuts?
I think there is a chance of rate cut. I think it's a, let's say, better chance than not for a few reasons. Even though Chinese GDP came out better than expected, nobody really believes it. More people believe the HSBC manufacturing PMI, which shows sort of hardly any growth, basically stagnation.
It's around 50, right? Right down to the middle, right? Around 50?
Yeah. It's just average. Prices of copper and iron ore that Australia exports have fallen recently, and that's that casts a shadow over Australia.
Yeah, about iron ore and copper, for the IMF currently predicts that copper will decline. The average price for 2015 will be around 24% down compared to 2014, and copper will be roughly 9% down for compared to 2014. So if these low figures will remain at their current low levels or even continue to fall, that's what they predict, at least for iron ore. And iron ore, as we all know, accounts for 22% of Australia's commodities exports.
It's very significant.
Yeah. So, okay. So China isn't doing well. Exports probably aren't continuing to contract. The volumes and also prices have gone down.
Yeah.
So this leads to a RBA rate cut, or there are other factors to consider?
Well, the main factor, the main mandate that the RBA has, like all central banks, is inflation. And inflation has been falling. Now, New Zealand, Australia's neighbor, had CPI released last week that showed a fall of 0.2 in quarterly prices. It's a quarterly release in both Australia and New Zealand, and only a rise of only 0.8 year over year. Similar numbers are expected from Australia. And another commodity country, Canada, which, okay, is also an oil exporter, not only a consumer of oil, they surprised with the rate cut. We talked about it last time. All this leads to higher expectations that the RBA will follow through, cut the relatively high interest rate of 2.5% by 25 basis points. The Aussie already fell against the dollar like so many other currencies fell, and I think with the RBA wanting an exchange rate of 75 cents, and there's still room to go all the way, I think they'll help the Aussie fall with the rate cut.
So wait a second, how do you relate the Bank of Canada's decision with the Aussies? How those two things are related?
Commodity currencies usually trade relatively close to each other. Canada's main export oil saw price fell quite a lot. Australia's exports, iron and copper, fell quite a lot. Inflation is falling as well. Australia wants a weaker currency. Canada, not as much. So here there is a difference. Both had housing, elevated housing prices, perhaps bubbles. So they have so much in common, and markets also see a move in one country as a leading sign to a move in the other country on this basis. There is a strong correlation. The Canadian rate cut certainly had an impact in pushing Aussie below 80 cents.
Oh, okay. So you think this is another issue that Governor Stevens takes into account when he considers the rate cut? What the Canadians have done also, this is another issue he keeps in mind?
Yeah, I think, both are relatively strong, stable, Western modernized countries. If the rate is cut in Canada, money could flow to Australia. The same goes, the same also goes for New Zealand. I mean, if New Zealand cuts the rates, money flows from New Zealand to Australia. Of course, the US dollar has a bigger impact than what the Fed does and over the exchange rate. But all these currencies, the commodity currencies, are correlated to each other. Sometimes they move, of course, in different directions. If it would be only oil falling and other metals going up. And we had the kiwi stable for a long time after New Zealand exports only, mostly food. So, and food was in steady demand. But once we saw also that also in New Zealand inflation fell quite sharply, that also weighs on the Australian dollar.
All right, we'll revisit this issue once we see some more news from the country down under. And let's turn to the FOMC. It started off, I think for me, it was looked like another yell and yawn, but then I think the markets reacted a little bit more to it. So what gives, Yochai? Was it actually just business as usual, or there was something more earth-shattering, if you will, in this statement?
Well, it was a yell and yawn at the beginning, and I think that's what it was meant to be, because the Fed doesn't like to rock the boat too much, especially when there's no press conference. So we saw markets hardly moving. But eventually, I think that the markets thought, well, the dollar is still the best game in town and the rest are weaker. For example, the first currency to crack was the Canadian dollar, which was already vulnerable earlier that day, and the others followed. But there were also a few interesting sort of half bullish signs in the statement.
Yeah, and the Fed was pretty much looked pretty bullish about the US economy, which give us a little bit insight into the GDP report that it could be actually pretty good, right?
Yeah, I'm almost sure, or actually sure enough, that Yellen and her colleagues had the GDP report on their desks while making the decision. And expectations have been lower, especially after the durable goods orders, but I think that they see a solid US economy, as they said. Another thing, they didn't talk about the fall in wages that we had in the last non-farm payrolls report. Do you think they know something about wages as well?
About the non-farm payrolls? I don't know. It's pretty early, but it could be. Even though they didn't talk about labor and wages per se, they did refer to falling inflation, right? They did address that inflation is coming down. Even the quote is, inflation is anticipated to decline further in the near term, but the committee expects inflation to rise gradually towards 2% over the medium term as labor markets improves further and the transitory effects of lower energy prices and other factors dissipate. They have referred to it, in a sort of a way about through the inflation. And I think this is, as you said all earlier, the mandate of the Fed is inflation labor. And I think the inflation is starting to crawl up into their heads that, yeah, maybe inflation could be a little bit of more of an issue. But you don't see it that way, right?
Yeah, because if we refer to the December press conference, Yellen was asked and talked about oil, and she basically dismissed it. Transitory was the word she used. And looking at their medium and long-term surveys, which are not what's priced into markets, not the five-year break-evens, but there are other surveys, which I'm not sure what they are, they see inflation as, anchored, if to take a page from the ECB, or basically they don't see any kind of danger of deflation. And we didn't see any change in this statement regarding this. So it's very different than other central banks such as the ECB, which fear that inflation will creep into core inflation. So I don't see them worried about that.
All right. They talked a little bit about the international developments. Obviously, it's just a little bit, just a sliver of that term got into the statement. Do you make something out of it?
I think it's sort of, they wanted to express worries about things that are going on elsewhere in the world. Japanese and European deflation, a slowdown in China, falling oil prices, maybe some geopolitical tensions. We have new things around Russia. But I think it's more of paying lip service as saying we're taking also international developments into consideration and not anything that will really affect monetary policy. Do you think this will affect policy if they see prices falling elsewhere in the world or weaker economies, they'll react?
Yeah, well, all these things are obviously interconnected. So once you see that inflation, as we saw it with oil coming down, it's also crawling into core inflation of the US and eventually could have some ramifications on the US inflation in the medium term even. The Fed didn't dismiss it, but if you look at the 5-year forward inflation expectations, they have come down a little bit and now they are around 2.1. Still okay, it's roughly in what's the direction they wanted, but they have come down from 2.7 when it was back earlier in 2014, and it will probably go even further down. But this time we didn't have any dissenters.
Yeah, I think it's, the main reason is that the voting members of the FOMC have just changed in their yearly rotation, and basically the statement didn't change too much from the previous statement, so I think there was not too much room for dissent.
And you think that these current members are a little bit more in line with Yellen and thus will have fewer dissenters even looking forward?
Yeah. We had a dovish member, Kochar Lakota. He's not voting this time. He's, I think, about to retire in 2016. So even when he does come back to voting, it'll be for a short while and only later in the future. And we had Richard Fisher, which is retiring in March and is a hawk and didn't vote this time. And last time they they went ahead of themselves to explain why they changed the wording. I mean, it was quite a complicated statement. This time it was sort of more of the same.
Yeah, this time we didn't have any considerable time. That's it. This is the first time, okay, we got rid of it, and now we have the new buzzword of the day, which is patience. I don't know about you, I'm not patient about this. This is, I think we need to move forward and see whether or not they actually pull the trigger on it. You still, what's your take? You still in line with a June rate hike?
Yeah, I'm still in line with the June rate hike. It could be a symbolic one, just changing it from 0 to 0.25% to exactly 0.25%. But this will be followed by consequent rate hikes, 25 basis points each time until the remainder of the year.
By the way, I looked at, as I said earlier, when it comes to what the markets actually expect in the rate hike, then there has been a little bit of a decline, not substantial, but it has been a decline in the past month or so. And for the June rate hike to reach 0.25 and up, it has declined the probabilities from 72% to 66%.
I think the pricing of rate hike in June was lowered because of the fall in wages that we've seen in early January for December. Other weak figures such as the durables report, which showed a slowdown.
Yeah, and in inflation going down. I think this is another component to bring down the chances of a rate hike. But for now, it seems that, yeah, the Fed is taking it under control, but it still hasn't translated into something that we can actually say, oh, they're going to push forward the rate hike. That's my take, at least for now.
Yeah, I think a lot depends on the, of course, non-farm payrolls, as the Fed said. It's data dependent, and also on the employment cost index in the GDP report, which we'll have soon, and then we'll have revisions. So if we do get a pickup, as I expect, I think June is still on the cards, but if we see more negative signs, then I think they'll push it back to September. I don't see them pushing it back all the way to 2016, at least not with the data we have now. What do you think? When will they hike?
I hope they won't raise rates in the coming months or in June and push it much forward, maybe at the end of the year. But for now, it doesn't seem that the fall in inflation and global economic concerns have too much to weigh in on them to push it forward. At least that's what they show. Maybe the minutes. Next month's minutes will reveal something else. But for now, it seems that the markets continue to expect a June rate hike. Maybe now it's a little bit less certain than what it was before because of the current inflation. But at least what we look at when we looked at the market reactions, precious metals, gold and silver tumbled down the following day after the statement was released. So it seems that at least the bullion bulls and shorters have something else in mind and think that that was a little bit more of a hawkish statement. It remains to be seen.
Yeah, as always, open to analysis.
Yeah, all right. So that's it. That's our show. Thank you, as usual, Yochai.
Thank you, Lior. Let's hope the extreme volatility we're seeing will continue and supply more opportunities for everybody.
Yeah, that's cool. And thank you all for listening. If you like our show, give us a 5-star rating on iTunes. You can subscribe to the show via Stitcher, email, RSS, or iTunes, whatever suits you fancy. So until next week, this is Lior signing off for Yochai, saying have a great week and invest responsibly.
This podcast should be used for educational, research, and informational purposes only and does not constitute investment advice. There are no guarantees expressed or implied of future positive returns in regard to the subject matter contained herein. Understand the risks inherent in investing before making the decision to invest or consult an investment professional for more information. Reasonable due diligence has been performed in regards to the information in this podcast. However, the hosts and guests of this podcast expressly disclaim any liability for accidental omissions of information or errors in fact. For comments, suggestions, and questions, visit the podcast page at forexcrunch.com or tradingnrg.com, where you can also find past episodes and subscribe to the show. Our listeners make market movers possible.